Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Social Work Radio with me, your host, Vince Peart. Once again, we are joined by our co-host, Cara Davis. Cara, my friend, how the devil are you? How have things been since you were last aboard the good ship SWR?
I'm doing fabulous. I mean, I'm about 90% mini egg right now, but other than that, I'm doing well. I'm doing good.
So, but that not make you a maxi egg?
A mega. What would you be a maxi egg right now?
Would you have a maxi egg or a mega egg? What would you be?
Mega egg is potentially where I'm at, but I'm enjoying the indulgence that is Easter. It's my favourite celebration of the year, to be fair, because like Christmas, it's not miserable, it's not cold and raining, and it's not there's like hope in the air, but you still get the good food.
That's a very good point. As well as my kids getting eggs, they get a present. I call it a Jesus present.
Oh yeah, and what is that? Do they get for that?
Well, this year they got Lego each. So my son got a Super Mario. He's got all the Super Mario Lego sets, but he got this one called Big Bad Island, I think it was called. My daughter got a Lego set. She got an Animal Crossing Lego set. So on Good Friday. It was definitely a good Friday around my house. breakfast was chocolate and Lego making.
Lego sets. Was the Lego sets a little bit for you, maybe?
I like to sit back and like to watch them. I don't need them too good. The only thing I sometimes have to help with is my son, because he's only four. He sometimes has to help me put the little bits together. So it's like calling the heavy machinery. Sometimes he struggles to find the bits, and I have to, because I'm the Lego consultant. That's what I am. I'm a Lego foreman.
I was going to say the work foreman.
Yeah, I said, come over here. Yeah, I'm just bought in for like the specialist high tech. He does the master. He does it better and quicker than me as well. I made myself some healthy paleo treats. I made myself some fake Snickers and some fake Bounties. So that's been my treat.
Is that the ones with the dates and the dark chocolate?
That's exactly what it is. Oh my God.
I love them.
Do you know what? It's amazing. It's amazing what you can do with a date. You can really make it out to be like caramel.
Yeah, they're so tasty. I mean, obviously, adding chocolate and peanut butter to anything makes it taste nicer, but it is delicious.
It's about what's been going on around here. And the other exciting thing, of course, is I've made the change. I've made the seasonal change in social work uniform.
Okay. What does that look like?
So, you know me a long time. I like a rule. I like a bit of order. I like, I like structure. I like doing the right thing. And, we were just talking before the show about this, weren't we? About, efforts to fix me. We'll not go down that route again. no diagnosis, please. Not today. Answers on a postcard, listeners. Answers on a postcard. Not on a postcard. Email. Answers on an email. Anyway, no, don't. Please, please, please don't start diagnosing me. If you do, don't do it via email. So anyway, when I was on my social work placement, 12 years ago now, I saw a man, the first man I saw, and I've based my entire social work outfit ever from that point. You know how, like, what animals is it? Is this a certain animal where if the first thing that it sees is a human, it grows accustomed to humans all the time?
Right, yeah.
You know, like I think it's a bird, isn't it? I think birds can't see humans. Certain birds can't see humans because they no longer think they're a threat. That's what it was like for me in social work uniforms. I based my entire look as a social worker based on the first man.
Person you ever met.
That man is a social worker. He's dressed like this. I am a man and I am a social worker. I should dress that way too. I've done that ever since. It's been chinos and checky shirts. That's it.
Okay.
Dressed that way for the first 7 years of my social work career. Then lockdown came about and I thought, you know what? We were talking about something last week. So I'm going to reinvent my look.
Yeah.
I thought, what should I dress like now? I thought, right, I'm still going to keep the chinos and checky shirts, but that's going to be my winter look. Summer, I'm going to be polo shirts and shorts. Now, the problem is, that's what I do. Now, somebody said I look like a hiker. This teenage girl, when I rocked up on the door, says, I'm your new social worker. She says, you look like a beep hiker. You can imagine what word it was. It wasn't a good word. It wasn't a lovely. It wasn't look like you like a lovely hiker. You don't look like a social worker. You look like a bleeping hiker. I was like, nice. That's the look that I'm going for. Now, my look for the summer is polo shirts and shorts. So yesterday, it was out with the old and with the new.
Ooh.
But not the shorts yet. So there's a kind of crossover period from April till mid-May where the shirts and fleece jackets are away. The sports jacket and polo shirt are out, but the chinos are still out and have yet to be replaced by the shorts.
I was going to say, up north it's like brave going shorts. I feel like even May is like brave still for shorts, isn't it?
It's or like a uniform,
might just be brutal.
Yeah, it's like a uniform, isn't it? That's just the look. That's just what we do. That's like I say, that's how it works, you know. Get a way of doing things and just do it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what my social work uniform is, to be honest. I mean, I purposely never wear cardigans for the fear of, like, becoming the social worker in the cardigan. But I used to wear, like, when I used to get in the office all the time, I used to wear, like, I had these, like, slip dresses that it were all in different colours, and they just put them on in different colours. Because trying to think about clothes for your day ahead is just hard work. So I do understand the purpose of the uniform.
It's too much, isn't it? But it's getting a bit too far, though, because it's getting to the point where I like to match certain shirts to certain shorts and chinos. And it's like I was getting to the point where I was going to lay my outfits out on my bed, take pictures of them and know that I had to wear this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And I thought, it's getting too far.
It's getting too far. Those PO box responses of your diagnosis, though. Whizzing their way in.
So anyway, I can hear you writing now, and I can see the word that you're going to be using more often than any other. Let's move on. Let's move swiftly on. So this week's topic, listeners, in light of it being spring and Easter and new beginnings, and in light of it being the turning of the seasons from trousers to shorts, we thought we'd talk about spring cleaning for social workers. And this comes off the back of an article, which was out on Wednesday, guys. If you head over to mysocialworknews.com, you'll be able to check out this article for yourself. We'll discuss that later. The article is all about 10 spring cleaning tips for social workers. Not about cleaning your house, but more about like cleaning up your act. So are you a fan of spring cleaning, Cara? Do you know, are you... This time of year, you know, you spoke about it a bit while we were having a chat about Easter and your maxi egg style at the moment. Are you a fan of the spring clean? You know, the old out with the old, in with the new. Is that something you find yourself coming around to this time of year?
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite like that anyway. I'm quite a minimalist person. Like, I'm not a...
You're a Marie Kondo. Do you get rid of any things that don't spark joy?
Yeah, you know, I'd love to be one of those people that keeps, like, boxes of memories and cards and you know puts them away and has all that sort of collection of stuff. But it's just not in me. I'm, like, in the bin. Not that I don't love cards and everything like that, but it's just not something that I, like, attach emotional importance to. So... possessions and things, like, they're there because they either have a use or they look good or, you know, something like that. So for me, I love a big spring clean. I love a big clear out. I'm a big fan of that. I'm not a fan of cleaning, if I'm perfectly honest with you. But I do like organizing and sorting things out, and that's more my bag, really.
And do you find yourself doing it particularly at certain times of year, like New Year, spring? Do you find yourself doing that? Is it constant, or do you find yourself having certain points of the year where you have a clear out and a kind of change?
No, certain points of the year are like feel more symbolic, I think, don't they?
Because
like you say, like even that thing you're saying about moving from wardrobes, like your spring or your summer clothes and your winter clothes and putting them away and vacuum sacking them and, you know, putting on your fresh clothes and having that switch around is, I think, feels really nice. Same as like I go out in the garden, like we talked about my obsession with the gardening the other day.
How are your plants coming on?
Well, I went out there last week. It's still a bit cold and miserable to fully embrace enjoy gardening. So I need to go out and do a big plant shop. But like that's that sort of thing of like, right, this is what I want to plant, or this is what I want to... All those sorts of things are really nice time to do that, aren't they? Like, I think there's like symbolic times of the year where it feels better, it feels more purposeful, and you almost feel like forced to do it a little bit.
I wonder if that's something that as human beings we just do, because if technology in humanity has kind of reached the point where the seasons aren't as big a thing. You can eat whatever food you want, whatever year round now. We no longer eat seasonally. And that's, I mean, look, obviously, you know, strawberries taste not a lot nicer in the summer because they're not shipped halfway around the world. And they're not, you know, covered in pesticides and all sorts to keep them fresh by the time they reach the supermarket. And even if you talk about frozen stuff, you know, and in terms of, you know, our homes and, you know, climate control, whether that's air conditioning or central heating. And increasingly now, I'm not saying it's a good thing at all, but, you know, a lot of jobs, you don't even have to leave your house. You know, we're no longer, as human beings, we are not tied to the seasons, tied to the environment, tied to the land like we once were. But I wonder if when you think of seasons and the change and the natural passing of time, I wonder if, look, we may be moving away from that, but if that is an intrinsic and, you know, essential yearning we kind of have, and it's just within us as human beings to act that way.
Yeah. Do you think there's a certain amount of that we kind of try to protect ourselves from that, and like you say, that sort of technological and industrial revolution element of all days are the same, you know, we all have to still get up and work and do everything the same, where traditionally if we were farmers, etc., you know, you'd have your busy periods of work, you'd have your slow periods of work, but that regardless of that, we still have those internal feelings of slowing down and needing to slow down, but then being frustrated with ourselves that we feel like that.
Well, COVID was a perfect example. Social work didn't stop. Social work didn't stop. You know, and suddenly, you know, for the first month and a half of COVID, I was still homeschooling because my wife at the time, she didn't initially think she was classed as a key worker because she worked for a university, and the status of were university staff key workers are not kind of up in the air. So initially, because the rule was, well, you had to both be key workers, but then we realized she could be classified as one, so the children went back. So I was, compared to a lot of people, you know, a lot of us in social work, if we were both key workers or single parents, could not have to care for your children. But, you know, for that first 6 weeks or so, it was lots of my friends were just on furlough, sat and played Call of Duty for the best part of a year, and we're getting the full wage. I'm not saying it was happy times. Of course, it was traumatic times, but as social workers, we had to deal with all the trauma, yet still continue doing our job. Even at a time like that, even at a time during a global pandemic, there wasn't a case of, do you know what I mean? Well, you can stop doing this, because technology transcended that. Oh, well, actually, we could work. And look, as I've said before, you know, the massive leap forward in work-life balance and the technological advancements that social work ushered in because of that have significantly improved my life. But we didn't get any pause. We didn't get a pause or break. We've still got to work over Christmas. We've got to work regardless. There are emergency duty teams right now, even though we're recording this in an evening, in this past bank holiday weekend over Easter, who's, the work doesn't stop because people don't stop. And when technology has given humankind the ability to transcend the natural barriers of nature, well, the sun goes down, but it doesn't matter because we can turn the lights on. The temperature drops, it doesn't matter because we can turn the heating up. It's the middle of winter. Don't worry, we can still get strawberries because we can ship them from around the world. It's great because you've got everything now. You've got whatever you want right now. And if you haven't got the money, get it on credit. It can be delivered next day by Amazon. That's great, but the abundance of everything comes at a price. And the price for me is that disconnect from nature. It could potentially be anime. Is this the reason why we're seeing mental health issues skyrocket? Is this the reason why people are saying they're more lonely than ever before? Is this the reason why it's increasingly common for people not to have children? Is this the reason why it's increasingly common for people to have failed marriages and be single and talk about loneliness and depression? I don't know. Those things may not be linked. And there's a lot of things I've said there that people are like, well, actually, I'd be more depressed if I did have children. I'd be more unhappy if I was married. That's just, you know, I'm not ascribing any positive and negative things to these. All I'm saying is these have been massive. There's been massive increases in these areas in line with technological advancement. And I'm not so sure if, you know, are we as detached from the changing of the seasons as we think we are? Or when this time of year comes, is there something innate and is there something internal which we've learned through our genes, through our heritage, through the power of God, for whatever it may be that you believe to or ascribe to, that this is just what we do. There's an innate yearning to see the passings of the season and react accordingly.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with that. And I think we know that we're not detached from the seasons, just from, even if you think of simple research around the impact of light and then the increase or decrease of suicidality in humans.
Yes.
And so we know that countries that experience issues with light and how much light they get experience higher levels of suicidality within their population. So even just the basics of how much the sun is in the sky, you know, whether that's covered up in clouds or raining or whatever, we know it has an emotional impact on how we view our lives. And yet we expect ourselves to still live in this, you know, capitalist machine of being functionable and functioning Monday to Friday, you know, and like you say, 24 hours a day, essentially for a lot of social work teams, you know, whoever's picking up that part. And we also know the impact of night shift working. And we know that people who work those unsociable hours and the impact it has on that. So I think it would be ignorant of us to pretend that we can protect ourselves from everything and not have the basics of how the world functions impact us.
I did night shifts for 3 years when I was a student. I was the night manager of a hotel, and it was great. It was, you know, I was very, very grateful for that job because obviously I went back into university in my mid-20s and trained to be a social worker. And I did a degree and then I did my social work master's. So I was 5 years to be a social worker in my sense, because I needed to do a degree because I wanted to go down the master's route. So I did a degree in child and family studies and I did a master's. Now, throughout the course of that 3 year child and family studies degree, my student loan, I was very lucky because I had a bursary. When I did my master's, I got an NHS bursary, which paid my tuition fees, paid me £6,000 a year. Now, that £500 a month was an absolute godsend for me. So I could take a part-time job and live. And I lived in a shared home with my best friend, Jason, and our mutual friend, Louise, at that point. So I was able to do that at the master's. But all I was getting was quite a small student loan for my degree. And, you know, I was in my mid-20s. I wasn't living at home with my parents. I was working by that point. So I had to get a job. And the only job that would really fit around and give me the wage that I needed was a night manager's job at a hotel. So it was more or less full-time hours because I did 3 10-hour shifts. And I used to work from, I would clock on at 11, yeah, 10 hours. So yeah, I would clock on at 9 o'clock on nights and finish 7 o'clock the next morning. I did that every Friday night through to Saturday morning, Saturday night to Sunday morning, Sunday night to Monday morning. I did that for 3 years and it was messes you up because I was having to go from night shift, then sometimes straight to uni. And I'm going to be honest, Cara, sometimes I look at that and I really regret it. And I think as that shortened my life because of that, you know, what did that cost me? Because it's absolutely alien. Now, I was a little bit naughty, I'm going to be honest. I sometimes used to sleep in the office. You know, I sometimes used to get 3 or 4 hours sleep here and there. And that helped when I started doing that. But yeah, hard times indeed. My mental health, got to be honest, my mental health probably suffered because of it.
Yeah, no, there's no coincidence that you get paid more, you know, for unsociable hours.
That's
but
what I'm on.
The reality of it, it's not just because you can't meet up with your friends on a Friday night. You know, I worked, I used to do waking nights in a children's home and waking nights in a residential drug rehabilitation placement. And that was when I was like early doors, again, similarly, when I was training to be a social worker and just after. And yeah, it was, that 3 o'clock, 3 till like 5 a.m. is just the worst time in the world to be awake.
It's awful, isn't it?
And I remember there's plenty of times I remember looking at like pavements outside and being like, I could lay on that pavement out there and go to sleep. It is brutal. So yeah,
you just felt stretched, didn't you, in those hours? I was just like, I was like zombified is the best way I could put it. Just numb.
Yeah,
can't be good.
I mean, my favourite ever job I got when I moved into children's services was working in a residential where I used to do the 7 till 3 shift. I used to love that shift because you're up early, then you finish at 3 o'clock, you've still got the rest of the day. And the reality is like those we're forced into hours, aren't we, in which like office hours exist, or you know, how shops open and how society kind of tends to function. But is that the best way? And that's just, you know, it feels maybe more achievable, like you said, when we talked about self-care before, it's that early morning walk. Well, that's a lot more achievable to do before you sit at your desk for 9 a.m, you know, between May and September in the UK in comparison to the winter. So it's just, I think it just highlights, doesn't it, like the work in which we do and how we fit a certain remit, but actually does that fit us as employees, but also does that fit the clients and people that we're working with, also that we're only available 9 to 5? Like, does that work? I don't know. It's just, I don't know. It all kind of makes sense that it feels difficult at times.
Yeah. I wonder if the shift to home workings help with that, though, because all the best managers I've ever known in social work have always had the same mentality, which is, as long as the work is done, as long as you're doing the work that's expected of you, getting your reports on time to a good standard, seeing your clients, making sure your case recording's done, if you're doing what's expected of you, I don't care how you do it. If you want to book that around your personal time, if you want to book this around commitments you've got, as long as the work's good, if you're going to take days off and, you know, your work's not being neglected, every social worker I've known who I've done that to and I've been a manager has thrived. Every manager who's done that to me has allowed me to thrive. So I do wonder if we are a little bit better. Not great, because the work's still got to be done, but I wonder if we are a little bit better. You mentioned something there that was quite interesting about light and the impact that light has on suicide rates.
Mm-hmm.
Do you suffer from SAD, seasonal affective disorder? Do you know anyone else who does? Are you aware of that? Do you believe it? Well, obviously you believe it exists because you've just quoted me some research on it, but is that something that affects you personally? Do you feel your moods shifting ever so slightly with the changing of the seasons and feeling brighter when there's more sun?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'd go as far as to say that I have SAD, just because I don't know if I'd necessarily class it as depressive, and I wonder if some of it, like, is what links into what we've talked about, is the expectations that we place on ourselves to function in the same way, say January, as we do in August. Like, the reality is that actually, is it a time to be gentle with yourself and kinder, and recognize that actually the dark mornings and dark nights impact on our well-being. So I definitely do feel the impact of the winter, and I think, I mean, would I love to, we joked about be going to Trinidad and Tobago as an exchange situation, but yeah. I feel like that would definitely be an option for me, like, but yeah, I think, I don't know, do you feel like sad as part of your life over that winter period, or
I do think that I feel better at this time of the year. I do think there are certain points in the year when I tend to kind of take stock of my life. Now, whether these are kind of just personal points to me, but I find myself around my birthday, around New Year, and around this time of year, I find my mood can shift and change. You know, I do feel better. I do certainly notice an improvement and an uplift in my mood when it comes to this time of year. I find myself going out for walks more. I find myself actually wanting to be in nature more. And living in the northeast of England, we really are affected by the weather up here. It really just, you know, really can be bleak and chilly at times. So I don't, I, again, I, Like you said there, I wouldn't go to the point where I said it actually, I don't think it would. But maybe listen to this, when you send your postcards in, I don't think that's a diagnosis. We can maybe rule that one out. But I
ruled that one out.
Yeah. No, maybe, look at me. I'm the worst kind of patient. I'm telling the doctor, no, I'm not that. Don't give me that. That's probably a sign, actually. That's probably a sign, some sort of narcissistic disorder right there that I know better. Tell me what I have got.
I've Googled the symptoms. It's not that one.
Yeah, that's how the patients I am. Yeah, doctor, could you just basically, I just need you to sign the prescription, Captain, please. That's all I'm looking for. I'll tell you how to do your job. But yeah, I don't think I suffer from SAD, but I do think that the lack of sunlight affects me. Coming back to earlier about the change of the seasons and human beings and what we're meant to be like, I wonder if that is the case. Before we got into spring cleaning then, it's been 4 months since New Year's Eve. Three full months, should I say. How are your New Year's resolutions coming on? Did you make any this year?
No, I didn't this year, exactly for the reasons that we've talked about, really, in that I think I'm definitely one of those toxic people in previous Januaries before, where it's like, January's coming, I'm going to, you know, do this and that, and my life's going to be 100 times better this year because I'm going to put this in place. And then obviously a week into January, I'm like, oh my God, getting out of bed is really hard. It's kind of, yeah, it all goes out the window. So this year I kind of decided that I was going to be gentle with myself and embrace that sort of winter mindset of resting and being kind to myself. So I guess, is that a New Year's resolution that I just kind of want to, we talked a lot, haven't we, about reconnecting with ourselves and with nature and who we are. And I feel like I really wanted to kind of try and do that this year, because I've spent so much of my life fighting against myself in order to be the best at whatever I wanted to do. But yeah, I just kind of feel like New Year's resolutions sort of feed into that for me.
I wonder if New Year's resolutions just work for some people and just don't work for others.
Yeah.
Because like, there can be a pressure to do New Year's resolutions because everybody else is. And I think if that's you and you feel pressurized, it's never going to work, because ultimately, where does real change come about? Does it come about because other people put pressure on us to change, or does it come about because we want to change? Now, if we're looking to make changes anyway, and that's a waypoint, then fair enough. But I wonder if the pressure of New Year's resolutions and on people to pick them can actually maybe move them away from the things that really matter, that actually sometimes, you know, taking a bit of time out, having a bit of peace, having a bit of headspace, just reflect and not being forced to do something because it's New Year's resolutions. Do you think that works better for some people? Could you be in that camp potentially, Cara?
Yeah, definitely. I think it is that thing, isn't it, about putting a random date on something to then give it meaning. Yeah. And like you say, and also, is it a little bit of, well, I can kind of put that off because actually it's December and the change might need to happen in December.
Yeah,
but
yes,
if I can
yes,
put
yes.
it off until January or, you know, and so each time you're kind of like, actually let's push that off rather than it being a date that you actually want to engage in that change, whatever that change is. And yeah, it's a bit arbitrary, isn't it, to just put a date on something when actually you could change at any point.
Yeah, you can change at any point. That's a very fair point. You can make those changes at any point. Now, having said what I've just said then, I did make some resolutions this year, and they were basically all about kind of being a bit more disciplined and doing what I say I'm going to do. So my resolutions were more about, not about a specific thing, like give up this, do that, be this, you know, get into this shape or anything like that. It was more a generic thing, which is essentially keep the promises that you're going to make to yourself. You know, do what you say you will, do what you say you will. And that was kind of it. And for the most part, I've been able to do that. But I think it's sometimes getting that balance between holding yourself accountable, but not beating yourself up. Because if you beat yourself up, you're not going to have the energy to do anything. So my New Year's resolutions, yeah, they are in place. 3 months in, yeah, more or less there. I can see myself making progress, being more accountable, pushing myself, but trying not to push myself too hard. So, spring cleaning. What spring cleaning are you looking to do this season? What is the old that you're getting out, and what is the new that you're bringing on in?
I like what you say about that sort of discipline element of that, and that sort of old me that kicks the can down the road. And yeah, always kind of says, oh, I'll do that next time or next month or next month when my paycheck comes in. I'm going to do this, this and this, and then next month comes and then I want to spend it on something else. So for me, like, my old habits are, I'd like to get, rid of some of my old habits, I think, especially around, I'm terrible at like planning holidays, but then never really going on them. And I know that sounds really silly because who doesn't want to go on a holiday? But I kind of then think, oh no, money's better used here, or you know, or it's wasted here. And so my old habit I'd like to get rid of is that sort of like non-conscious spending, and actually do some, my new will be a new adventure. I really want to go to Japan. So I'm going to consciously try and bring in some of that renewed energy to use my money mindfully, and actually, as we're into a new annual year leave as well, spring hits in annual leave for us social workers that are on the on the books, that actually planning that in, and we talk a lot about what work-life balance, don't we, but actually what does that really mean unless you're actually mindfully planning for that. So that's my plan, I think, for my bit of my spring cleaning. Old habits be gone, new holidays in.
It's a very positive one. We all support you on that one, Cara, I'm pretty sure, you know. It's not, there's going to be no objections to that. Passed without any amendments. That one has sailed through. All those in favour say aye and raise their hands. It's a unanimous show of support for getting rid of those things. For me, I'm not sure, really, in terms of spring cleaning. I think that the main thing that I kind of like to change and get rid of is the self-doubt that stops you saying what you really feel, and the self-doubt that holds you back from going for what you want. Because it can be difficult in life, can't it, to get to a point where you think, you know, where do you find that balance between accepting that you're comfortable in your life right now and always striving for more? Because if you always strive for more, you can sometimes look at your current life with disdain, and it can be difficult. Because if you're always looking up the hill, well, as John Lennon said, life's what happens while you're busy making other plans. So if you're always looking, right, what's the next thing I want to achieve? I want to do that. I want to do that. I want to be here. I want to get this job. I want to have this project completed, and so on. If you're always doing that and you've always got that mindset, you can rarely sit back and appreciate the life you've got. And I was just talking about this with my girlfriend over. We went out for a couple of drinks this afternoon. Non-alcoholic for me, in case this is a thing. No one Vince is talking nonsense. He's drunk. I had two ginger beers and both were delightful. We talk about this at the pub. I was talking about like the dilemma that I have sometimes between, well, how much of your commitment in life do you spend and your resources, whether that's financial or mental or emotional or time, how much of your life do you spend focused on appreciating the here and now, and how much do you sort of spend in that mentality of hard choices now, easy life later? How much living do you pass off for a future that might never come? And it can be very, very difficult, that balance between, you know, right, well, do I treat myself to a holiday this year because I've got my relative youth, I've got my relative health, my children will never be this young again, I might never have these freedoms again, there could be something awful looming around the corner that there, but for the grace of God, go I right now? Or do you say, actually, I'm going to scrimp and save a bit more now, I'm going to forgo the things that I could do now and the pleasures that I could have in life right now and save for a rainy day? And it's a difficult one. It's a difficult one because I think the modern world, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, it feeds into the idea of YOLO because people only put the best version of themselves up. And look, I might only see two or three posts from the hundreds of friends. I don't have lots of Facebook friends, maybe 150 or so. I keep it quite small and purposefully. And as a social worker, I think you generally have got to do a lot of the time. But yeah, I'll sometimes see only three or four posts from certain friends a year, but it's always holidays, weddings, birthdays, gigs, nights out. That's all I see of them. But if that's all you see, if each one of your 200 or 300 friends, however many you've got online, is only showing you their best times. While you're getting 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of those best times every single day, it can make your own life look a bit pale in comparison. I think that can almost create a YOLO mentality, which is, you know, well, why not live for today? And it's a difficult balance. It's a difficult balance. That was a debate I was having. It's the kind of dates I take my girlfriend on. We sit in the pub and we have debates like that.
Debates over your ginger beer. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure I've got a good time. Come to the pub. You can have a wine. I'll have a ginger beer. And we'll talk about the very difficult concept of... I even got the beer mats out and I was like doing like this beer mats here. This is life right now. And this is future. It was, you had to be there. You probably didn't have. I'm not selling this.
I don't know, but I'm here now.
Yeah, probably don't want to be there, to be honest. But anyway, it's a difficult one. And I do struggle with that at times. I do struggle with the wanting to make the most of life, because particularly in the world's in turmoil right now, it can be very difficult indeed when it's scary when you see the news and what's going on and thinking, you know, well, actually, no, you know, I'll appreciate more of what's going on right now and I'll sit back and it's hard, Cara, it's hard and I need a clean. Come and clean me out.
I mean, that's exactly what I would say, really, in the sense of that sort of like unconscious spending to then have those YOLO moments. But then actually the things that you really want to do, the things that bring you passion or whatever, they kind of get pushed to the side because, oh, well, you know, another day. And yeah, I think it's an impossible tightrope to live, isn't it? And in some respects, that in itself is, you know, if you feel like you're constantly thinking, is this the right decision? Is this, am I doing this for the now or the future? That in itself is pretty exhausting. But I think, I don't know if you'll ever get that right. But you can only give it a whirl, can't you? And what a better time to do it than now.
And that's a very good point. I've got a better time to do it than now. But that's the whole point. The whole point is that the mentality that I want? Is that the mentality that I want?
Oh, no, I don't know.
What my girlfriend said, you know, she's very, very good for me in terms of like helping me think things through. She's a wonderful, you know, that she tolerates me and accepts me for who I am. She also writes a lot of postcards with diagnosis as well, listeners, just in case you're wondering. She'll be writing most of them in. What she was saying that I thought was very profound, and I think this is going to be my spring cleaner, what I'm going to focus on, is do things right now that align with your values of who you want to be. So when you look to the future and you think, you know, where's my life going? What are the values that you want? So if you're spending money and time and resources in the here and now, well, actually, does that align with my values of the person I want to be? So you're not doing things like going out there and buying a new car or going and have a fancy new holiday just because other people are doing it. The mentality is, well, actually, am I doing things right now that bring value to my life, that bring value to my loved ones, and that will give me positive memories that I look back? Because I listened to a podcast not that long ago, and I think it was Jimmy Carr that was on it. And Jimmy Carr said, there is nothing you can go into a shop and buy right now that will make you happy in 5 years' time.
Yeah.
Nothing. Nothing you can buy right now that will still make you happy in 5 years' time. Because the novelty, it'll either the novelty will have worn off, or there'll be a shiny new model out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's so true. Even your house, like I'm like now at the moment trying to read like just leaks coming out everywhere. I'm like, oh my god,
there we go.
It's ever the rain. But yeah, no, that's so true. Not only is, I mean, sans Jimmy Carr, but not only is your girlfriend incredibly patient, but that's a lovely, profound statement. I really like that. I've. It gets to the nub of the issue, doesn't it? I love it.
Yeah. No, it was really good. So maybe you might be up for those ginger beer debates with this car. Maybe I have sold it to you now. You've seen there's a good outcome to it. But it's
good. Isn't that what this is every week?
Yeah, our ginger beer. That's what we're going to do. That's it, listeners. It's no longer going to be social work radio. It's going to be ginger beer debates. It works out well. GBD. Sounds like a drug, doesn't it? Give me a little bit of the GBD on a ginger beer debate. But yeah, and then given I've got a ginger beard, it could be the ginger beard debates as well. Could be that one as well. But yeah, it's that's kind of what I think I'm going to be focusing on. Really, my spring cleaning is going to be that letting go, learning to let go of that which does not matter. And coming back to what you were saying earlier about the minimalistic view of life, learning to let go of things that do not spark joy. My own little Marie Kondo, she is. Right, let's go on. We've teased people. We did this on the last show. We've teased people with a show about spring cleaning for social workers. Finally, we've got there. The payoff's coming, guys. Like I said earlier, if you want to head over on Wednesday, I put an article out on mysocialworknews.com about 10 tips for spring cleaning for social workers. Cara, are you? Should we pretend that you haven't read these already and you're ready to hear these and offer your views?
Go on, I'll do my best acting.
There we go. So listeners, it is a time of year, which is, as we've just, spent the podcast discussing, a time of change, a time of reflection, out with the old, in with the new. And as we, if we're in the Northern Hemisphere, at least, look forward to brighter, sunnier days. And I thought I'd do a bit of an article on that. So here are 10 spring cleaning tips for social workers. Number one, reconnect with your purpose. Think about the cornerstone of your practice and your driving force. Where are you going? What inspired you to pursue social work in the first place? I think that's really important, Cara. Obviously, I would say it's really important because I wrote it, but I think it's really important in general because there are a lot of people I know in social work, and I've been there myself, who are deeply unhappy with the career. And if people are ready to hear this message, I say the same thing to them every time, which is remember that where you are right now is the point in your life that you promised yourself you would be happy. Let's remember when you and I first walked into university well over a decade ago. We dreamed of being in the position we are there. I dreamed of just passing my first module and getting through the first semester. Like, I had a dream when I walked through that first day at university, I want to be a social worker. And where I am right now, if you could have given the younger Vince in his early 20s a glimpse of where my life is right now, I would have snapped your hand off. Wow, you'd have a job, you'd have a house, you'd have a car, you'd have, that finance, that income would look massive to me. Wow. Truth of the matter is, I had more disposable income back then because I had far less expenses. I didn't have children and I didn't have a car and I didn't have a house. I just had a flat in the middle of the town, the city where I was doing my degree. But I think reconnecting with your purpose and if you can, if you're in that mindset, to tell yourself, well, actually, I promised myself I'd be happy with where I am right now, and maybe looking at that and seeing where you are, I think that can be a good start. Cara, what do you think?
Yeah, totally. I had someone ask me the other day, like, well, what do you do for work? And I sort of, give you a general overview, and they're like, oh, I bet that, I bet you really enjoy that. And sort of said, oh, I don't know if enjoy is the right word. And then I thought, but I can't imagine myself doing anything else. Like, I cannot imagine doing any other type of career. And I think that's really the key, isn't it? Like, although we might view some of, of the world that we're in sometimes in different ways, actually the purpose, the point, I cannot imagine doing anything else. And that's what you need to reconnect with, is that passion that you have for where you're at and what you're doing and what you're achieving.
Yeah. And getting back to that point can really help, because it can remind you, even in the darkest of times, well, actually, this is, I once wanted to be here.
Yeah.
I once wanted to be here. Tip two is to establish clear and attainable objectives. I'm not going to talk about SMART criteria, because people all know that you have to be specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. So I'm not going to go into massive detail about those. But the important here, I think, is to look for clear and attainable outcomes. Okay, you're having a bit of a spring clean, out with the old, in with the new. What do you want to achieve? What do you want to achieve? For you, Cara, it's foreign holidays. For me, it is more ginger beer debates.
I do.
Number three, embrace lifelong learning, commit to lifelong learning. I think sometimes CPD, continuous professional development, can seem like it gets in the way of social work, but let's be honest, Cara, it really is important, isn't it, to kind of look at where you're going in terms of training, keeping on top of things, theories, frameworks. As a manager, of course, Cara, you've got to commit to this.
Yeah, obviously, absolutely obsessed. No, I'm terrible for it as a manager, actually. I thought that the other day. I thought, oh God, I've not really done any training like that I can think of that's kind of supported my CPD. And so I booked on to a few conferences. I think it's about finding what is of interest to you. And I'm looking at, like, what is actually of interest and value, and not just doing training for training's sake. But I think, like you say, it's that connection with what is that learning that you want to do, and and finding something that you can actually engage with. You're not just going through the process and then because then you feel guilty because you're not in the office all day.
That's really good, because you're more likely, in my opinion, you're far more likely to commit to something if you're doing it because you want to do it rather than because it's prescribed. So yeah, finding your own course is really good. Mm. Number four, I'm not going to go over this in detail. We spoke about this last week. It's prioritize self-care. We know all about self-care. Go back and listen to last week's podcast if for some reason the concept of self-care in social work has passed you by. If the entire concept of self-care has passed you by in social work, you probably need to listen to that podcast more than anybody. Number five is to build your support system. I don't know about you, Cara, but sometimes social work can feel isolating. Even though we work in teams, particularly with the move towards home working and the individual case responsibility we hold, sometimes we can be guilty of silo working. So I think a good way of having a bit of a check over spring is to, you know, are you getting the support you need? Are you telling people how you feel? Are you asking for help when it is necessary?
Yeah, absolutely. It's essential. And, you know, we've talked about friendships before, and I think it's those people that you can connect with and build beyond just you.
I think within that, you know, the sixth aspect here is, listeners, is to reflect on your work-life balance. You know, a work responsibility seeping your personal time. You're allowing yourself to unwind and recharge outside of work hours. Again, go back and listen to last week's podcast to check into that. Point seven is to review and revise documentation procedures. Of course, we're going to get to paperwork and case notes. But look, the truth of the matter is, Karen, again, as someone in your position, you will know this all too well. The bread and butter of our social work is the work we do with clients. The way we evidence that is the case notes. These two things go hand in hand. So I think this can be a really good time of year to go and check your case chronologies. Are the right phone numbers on for the clients? Are the right addresses on for the clients? Are your eco maps and genograms up to date? Are you doing your case notes effectively? Are you doing them? Have you got time dedicated? Could you do it quicker? Can you be more efficient? I just think this can be a really boring thing to do. But at this time of year, while we're thinking of spring cleaning, can you clean up your case files a little bit as well? Do you want to do a mini audit for yourself? Because, Cara, it's far better if you're going to do that to yourself than somebody else coming in and saying your case notes are lacking.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's about rereading it and reviewing it, your ethos around writing case notes as well. Like, not just about, are they on there? You know, actually rereading your work and being like, actually, am I happy with what my work looks like to... not just whoever's auditing, because I think that's actually a misdirect, is about, you know, potentially the people that you're writing about reading it. And would you be happy if you read that about yourself? So I think sometimes it's just reviewing, rereading it and thinking, am I happy with how I write if someone else was going to read this?
That's a really fair point. You know, who you're writing for, you're writing for yourself, you're writing for an auditor, or you're writing for your clients.
Absolutely.
Next one. Enhance your communication skills, like we spoke about there, in terms of, you know, the evidence of social work being your case notes. But you can also look at this time of year to enhance your communication skills. Clean up, see where you're going, look at your interpersonal skills, through listening techniques, practicing empathy, exploring strategies for those difficult conversations. Look at that. Number nine is embrace innovation in your approach. Now, I think this is really important because it can be quite easy, particularly when we're under stress and duress and we're facing crisis in work, to just keep doing what you're doing and not think of new ways. And I think those can become hardwired and embedded. But sometimes I can hear you guys complaining already when I say this, but in my experience, it really is true that sometimes you can work smarter, not harder, and it can be a lot easier for you and it can lead to a lot better results. Am I going to get told off for saying that, Cara, or do you see that too at times?
I mean, I feel the same. And potentially if you're feeling really aggrieved by that statement, then maybe it is that is the moment to take stock and reflect, because actually there's always time for us to change our approach and to embrace something new and to look at how we're doing something differently. And just because you've maybe been doing this job for 10 plus years, there isn't an opportunity for you to learn and keep on developing. And if you feel aggrieved by that, then that's probably what you need to hear.
And the last one is dedicate yourself to things outside of direct social work. Like, look at advocacy, because, you know, good quality social work isn't just about individual client interactions. It isn't just about your case notes. If we have a look at our social work codes of conduct, and I did this the other day because I'm a bit of a, some news hot off the press, listeners. I'm currently working on a new social work book. And as part of that, I was looking at our ethics and, you know, basically the IFSW, the International Federation of Social Workers definition. I was just doing a bit of delving into that. When we have a look at the definition of social work, it is not just about direct client interactions and doing the things that we're told to by the system and the bureaucracy. It is also considering what we contribute to society at all, as a whole. So this could be about identifying causes that ignite your passion, you know, look at political contributions through mobilization, policy initiatives, public awareness. Sometimes that can be quite invigorating, Cara, to look beyond the direct engagement you have with clients and think about, well, hang on, how can I change the world, not just for my individual clients, but for the world as a whole?
Yeah, and it can be a tricky tightrope to manage sometimes, balance, because I guess there's a sanitization of social work in us being products of our employers, aren't we? And we, you know, we have to be mindful of what we put out online and how that you know, may impact. And I think that's how people tend to look at like political impact, kind of saying something on Twitter, but actually there's so many real life opportunities to be an advocate, so many community partnerships, so many important things that are happening around us that we can connect with. And it's not just having to go on a tirade on social media, for example. And yeah, I think being an advocate within your local community is so important in terms of embracing change.
Yeah. No, well said, my friend. Well said indeed. So there we go, listeners. Head over to mysocialworknews.com if you want to read that article for yourself. Obviously, you don't have to follow all 10, but if there's one or two there that you're going to find useful, do consider it as you look towards the changing of the seasons and perhaps moving into a new chapter of your life. Well, Cara, it is time to move on to a new chapter of our lives and then get back to the ginger beer debates and move away from Social Work Radio for this week, at least. As always, listeners, do head over to mysocialworknews.com if you want to check out the article we've been discussing today. As well on there, Cara has her column out every Friday. I've got mine every Tuesday, and there is lots of other content to check out. Do consider leaving us a review for where you've got this podcast from. We will read it out next week when we'll be back with who knows what, but we will be back. Until next week, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.